it shows that there is a serious amount of compassion, humanity, and brotherhood inside the FBI that I'm not sure most people really know about.
They put out an email to all the agents in the Los Angeles field office. If anyone was able, would they be kind enough to buy a Christmas gift? They stuffed the van. I believe we had two vehicles stuffed with toys.
Yeah, the FBI and my colleagues at the FBI, I still thank them to this day.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hello, and welcome to a special holiday edition of Best Case, Worst Case. This is Jim Clemente, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor and writer-producer for CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
Hi, everybody. It's Francie Hakes, former state and federal prosecutor. Jim, it's a Christmas extravaganza.
I suppose that's what it is.
I think that has to be the title.
I guess it does. So why don't we dive right in with our first guest, Maureen.
Hello, everyone. My name is Maureen O'Connell, and I'm a retired FBI agent.
And Fitz?
James R. Fitzgerald here, a.k.a. Fitz, retired FBI agent, profiler, forensic linguist, and all that stuff.
Great. And we have a special guest.
Hi, guys. My name is Diego Flores. I am currently a student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and my father was a special agent, Luis G. Flores, in the Los Angeles office.
Awesome.
That's great, but that's not all we have. That's not all we have, Jim.
I know.
We also have Josh. Say hi, Josh. It's the Christmas extravaganza.
Hello, everyone. I'm the force of evil that kept these folks in business for so many years.
There you go. The force of evil.
And then lastly, but certainly not least, we have our famous editor. Everyone who listens to Best Case, Worst Case knows our producer, Josh, and our editor, Matt Gergel, and engineer, Matt Gergel. And Matt Gergel is on this episode, Jim. Matt, say hi to everybody.
Hi, Best Case, Worst Case listeners.
I think you're supposed to introduce yourself as well, if you wouldn't mind.
My name is Matt Gergel. I'm the pretty face of Best Case, Worst Case.
There you go.
Good point.
Well, nobody's going to argue that, let me just say.
Definitely not. So, Jim, this is so exciting, and I just want everyone to know how excited we are because this episode is going to be released on Christmas Day, and it's the first time that Best Case, Worst Case has an episode that...
Are we going to sing carols?
What?
Are we going to sing carols?
Oh, you're not. What?
Well,
I don't think so.
Oh, please.
Certainly not. Now, Maureen, who has a beautiful... No, stop. Oh, my God.
Sing.
This is not what the Christmas extravaganza is
about.
Oh,
I think it is.
No, and if anyone's singing, it'll definitely be Maureen, who has a beautiful voice and has sung our national anthem.
Insulting my voice?
Yes, it's awful. Let's just be
frank. Please, come on. Joy
anyway,
to the world.
No, good grief. He's doing it again.
Matt. We got to instruct Matt to cut out any songs by Jim Clemente.
All right. How about Silent Night?
Well, even worse.
How about just plain silence?
Josh, as the podcast producer, you're not really controlling Jim at all, I notice.
Oh, please.
I was looking through the videos on my phone to find Maureen's singing video. She does have a beautiful voice, for sure.
She does. Confirmed. She absolutely does. But she's not here to sing either.
Fitz, do you want to join me in these carols? Because these ladies just don't seem to want to join in.
Last Christmas, I gave you my heart. Something
Very
happened,
next day.
And it fell apart.
Wait, that's
and that's
not
as far
words.
As I'm gone. And that's not really a Christmas song. I've listened to those lyrics.
All right, hopefully, Diego, you can save us. Do you have a voice?
I do not, unfortunately. I'm trying to think of a Christmas song, and they're all blanking. It's the only one I knew.
Diego's superpower is water polo. He's a great water polo player.
Matt has a guitar. Wait. We can have him accompany us.
This episode really got off the rails. This Christmas extravaganza is nonetheless still in the theme of best case, worst case, Jim, which does not include Christmas carols.
Okay, whatever. So what are we going to talk about today?
Well, I want to start with Maureen, because when I reached out to Fitz and to Maureen about doing this Christmas extravaganza, I told them that what we were looking to do was something a little bit different than our normal best case, worst case episode. And that is something with a Christmas theme. It can be things that we've all experienced during the Christmas holidays in our careers, cases that we've had at that point, or just interesting tidbits about law enforcement and Christmas that our listeners might find interesting. And Maureen told me that she has a really important story to tell us, and that is why Diego has joined. So Maureen, why don't you start?
Thanks, Francie. Well, in, I want to say 2006 or the end of 2005, my dear friend, Louis Flores, who's Diego's father, was diagnosed initially with stomach cancer. Mm. And he was an absolute legend in the FBI field office in Los Angeles. He was our chief division counsel. He grew up in Humble Park on the north side of Chicago in a very poor neighborhood and ended up graduating at the top of his class from Notre Dame Law School and becoming the division counsel here in Los Angeles.
Wow, that's legit, Notre Dame Law School. That is amazing.
That is legit. And he was, I mean, if you looked at him on paper, he was just so smart and so well-respected. But if you knew him as a person, he was hysterical. And he was just the type of friend. He was a little tiny El Salvadorian. He said he was the only El Salvadorian in the Humble Park area, which was all, I believe, Puerto Rican at the time. And he got his clock cleaned on a regular basis as a young person. But as did I on the South side. So from the minute we met, we were just brother and sister. He just was one of the best friends you could ever have. If you were lucky enough to call him a friend, you were lucky enough, put it that way.
Awesome.
And so when he got diagnosed at that time, Diego's mom, her ability to speak English was much less than it is now. And so she was having a really hard time navigating the his medical care and everything like that. So Louis's other good friend, Scott Gariola, and I stepped in and we helped out with the doctors, with the translations, with pretty much anything they needed. And it got to the point where the assistant director of the FBI for the Los Angeles division, Adick Tidwell, asked us to be the sole liaison for the family. And at that point, it became like an auxiliary duty. It was almost like a SWAT team or ERT duty where we were almost assigned to the family for until the end, which was, you know, it was just one of the great honors of my life to be on that, what I would call the transition team.
Well, and Diego, before Maureen gets into the sort of the Christmas part of this, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your dad and what you remember about him being an FBI agent and what that sort of meant to you? What did you know about it?
When he was diagnosed 5 and in the 2 years after that, you know, up until the age of 7. So I was pretty young. You know, like Maureen said, what I do remember is definitely watching Notre Dame football games and cheering on the Irish. And I remember how much he loved Notre Dame. Beyond that, I didn't know too much about what he did in the FBI. I just knew that I loved when all of his FBI friends came over, like Maureen and like Scott and Jim and Kathleen McChesney and, you know, so many other names that would come for dinner parties or would come to sit by his bedside and talk to him. Those are the people that I got to know from the FBI. And so I learned what the FBI was through them. And, you know, I've looked up to every single one of those people since I was young.
That's amazing. And that's so beautiful. Maureen, how does this relate to Christmas?
It relates to Christmas because hold on a minute.
Holidays are, of course, a very emotional time.
I haven't cried about Louis in a long. Hold on a second.
Take your time, Maureen.
It relates to Christmas because obviously it wasn't a case, but it was a definite caper. And it was one of those fun capers that FBI agents just really love to do. It started initially with us helping the family with whatever they needed. And then it became very clear toward the very end of Louis' life that Christmas was approaching and he had these two beautiful little... Wait a second. I don't know why I'm losing it.
It's okay. Just take a deep breath.
I don't think Diego's ever seen me cry like this. It became abundantly clear that this beautiful wife and her two children were not going to have a very good Christmas. And Louis said to me, "Would you mind get my wallet, Momo?" He's the only one I ever allowed to call me Momo.
Oh, new nickname.
Not really, Jim. I might get throat punched, but
I don't know, Jim. I love it. Oh, I'm not getting throat punched. Never mind.
I know. No, you're not.
Let Josh do it.
And Louis Flores, I was at his bedside one day and he's like, "Momo, get me my wallet. See how much money's in there. Would you do me a solid and go over to Target and get some presents for my kids? I haven't had time to shop. I feel terrible. And I don't know what I'm going to get my wife. You need to help me figure out what I'm going to get my wife and see how much money I have in my wallet." So I get to his wallet and he has no money in his wallet. And he was like, "Drive me to the ATM." And at this point, it was like so far beyond him being driven to an ATM, but he never gave up, ever, not until the very last day. So I went to work and I said, "Hey, can someone take this on? We need to get some gifts for the kids." And I had a bunch of wiretaps up at the time. I think I had three wiretaps up and they were all really busy gang and drug wires. So I was being pulled in a bunch of different directions. The assistant director approved the request and they put out an email to all the agents in the Los Angeles field office. If anyone was able, would they be kind enough to buy a Christmas gift, obviously wrapped, and bring it down into the garage? They would have a van open in the garage and people could fill the van with the gifts, which in fact they did. They stuffed the van. I believe we had two vehicles stuffed with toys.
Oh, wow.
Now, I tried to talk to Pilar about it and she was like, "I don't want my children to have too many gifts. No, that is not good. I don't spoil my children." Right, Diego? Your mom's always like,
"Yeah."
Yeah. And I said, "Well, okay, you're just going to have to shelve that for a minute, Pilar, because Scott and I are taking over. So you're going to have to deal with that." And then they did that. And I had to find out a really nice gift for Pilar because it was apparent that this was going to be their last Christmas together. So I talked to a bunch of wealthy FBI agents that had retired and some wealthy people I know. And I had them all chip in a couple hundred dollars each. And we bought Pilar the most fabulous Louis Vuitton bag, a big one. And it was great. But now we had to figure out how to get all the stuff in the house without Pilar stopping us. So we told her that the squad was going to come over and we had just a couple of things for the kids. And that was it. And she said, "Okay, but how are you going to tell the kids without letting them know that there isn't a Santa?" I said, "You leave that to us." And that's where the caper part came in.
I love a good caper, especially a Christmas caper.
Did you have a chimney? Did you have a chimney by any chance in your house?
I do, but it's not something we can access like from the top, but yes, we do have a chimney.
Because I was wondering if Maureen was going to actually slide down the chimney. That would have been
Back then, I probably could have. After Maureen's, COVID, not so much, yeah.
Maureen's description of your mom sounds like an awful lot of moms. Does that sound right to you that she would just say, at a time like that, I still don't want to spoil my kids. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. And we were just, you know, talking about this meeting a couple of days ago, and she was like, "I couldn't believe all the presents, you know." But yeah, that does sound like something she would say and still would say today, so.
So Maureen, what did you do?
Scott and I devised a plan where we would go in and we worked out the script, Fitz and Jimmy, just as you can imagine you would for any case or caper. When I walked in the house, Scott and I had already worked on our script. We had figured everything out. We had a whole pretty much command post out in the parking lot of the condo complex where Louis and Pilar and the two children lived. And so we walked in and said, "We're going to be bringing up a couple of gifts in a little bit, but we're going to talk to the kids first." And Pilar said, "Okay, fine, thank you." And Louis just looked at Scott and I, and he knew we were up to no good, or actually a lot of good, but trouble anyways. So I knelt down and I said to Carolina and to Diego that every year, all kinds of presents get misplaced. I don't know if you kids know this or not, but presents get misplaced left, right, and center. So each year, Santa stands up a squad in the FBI to help find these kids for these missing presents. And because, you know, the FBI can find anybody at any time. And they're nodding their heads, yes, yes, yes. And I said, what we have here is a bunch of presents for someone named Diego and Carolina, who has a mom named Pilar and a dad named Luis.
So every year, the FBI, we form a squad because we can find anybody anytime. So we're on Santa package duty. We have some packages. They're for a little girl whose name is Carolina, who's 4 years old, and a little boy named Diego, who's six. And they have a mommy whose name is Pilar and a dad whose name is Luis. Do you know anyone else? Do you know anyone else who has that? Do you know any other Carolina and Diego that have a mom named Pilar and dad named Luis? Okay, well, Santa says he can tell by your voices if it's you, and if it is, we have some presents for you guys, okay?
Okay. Should we call him six?
Yes.
All right.
Should we call the command post?
So she was working today.
How old was Carolina? Four, Diego?
Yes, four.
She was just the cutest little angel. So Scott said, I'm going to call out to Santa. I'm going to call the command post, see who's on duty. So he calls the command post, gives the phone to Gina Isabel out in the parking lot, unbeknownst to the kids, and then asked to speak to Santa. They put my husband on, and he says he can recognize them from their voices because he received their letters, which even then I was like, what? Okay. And
it's Santa. It doesn't have to make that much sense.
I know.
Sense.
It doesn't have to make sense. And so Santa said hi to Carolina, and she's so cute. She's like, Merry Christmas, Santa.
Oh, you know, my God.
So sweet. And she kept running up to the phone like to say Merry Christmas. And then
Diego didn't do that?
No, Diego was answering. Diego was like his dad. He was answering Santa's questions. You know, he wasn't worried about pleasantries. It's like, yes, that's me. Bring him in.
Let's
Diego's
go.
Diego's thinking, let's get to the gift giving stuff.
Yeah. Hello, this is Agent Gariola. Yeah, I'm calling to see if Santa Claus is around. We think we may have found the two children all the presents belong to.
Oh, Santa speaking.
Santa Claus? Okay, this is Agent Gariola from the Los Angeles FBI. I think I found Pilar's children, Diego and Carolina. And we have them right here. Do you think you'd be able to recognize their voice?
Absolutely. I've read their notes.
Okay, Carolina, say hello, Santa.
Hi, Santa.
Hi, Carolina. How are you?
Fine.
Okay.
Hi, Santa. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. I have a
bunch of long packages out here. I need to deliver.
Are you two the ones that requested these packages for Christmas?
Yes, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Okay, well, I'm
going to
send in my helpers to bring you these packages, okay?
Okay, thank you, Santa.
Yay!
Send them up.
Yay!
So this was Christmas Eve, and all of us had little kids, and all of us went to the Flores' house to make sure that they did. And someone said, couldn't you have done it like the day before or the day after? And I said, what could be more important for our children to see us do this for his children?
A great story.
Diego, what do you remember about that? It just sounds like it must have been so incredible.
Yeah, I definitely remember the cars, the vans pulling up and them being full. And I almost, Maureen mentions, you know, the little story of her telling us why the presents were there. And I for some reason, I still remember like not really believing that all of this was going to be for Carolina. I was like, you know, who's bringing these presents? Like, right. I knew it was Santa, but I don't know. I remember being so confused. It was so much and so nice that I couldn't believe it. And then I remember the living room being full with all the toys and, you know, just going through and looking and the room also filled with FBI agents. And yeah, I remember very well picking out a big Pirates of the Caribbean boat as my favorite toy that day.
And Diego, by full, describe how full that house, that front room and or that living room, dining room were with toys.
I'm sitting in the same living room that it happened. I remember the entire living room was full. You couldn't see the ground.
Wow.
Wow.
His mom was like, no more. No more.
So,
oh my gosh, you said a few.
Did you just keep having these kids go and bring more and more and more?
Well, it was kids and adults, yeah.
Yeah, and I would run up and down with them. And so I was part of the, you know, transportation crew as well. So yeah.
Wow.
And the only way we could do that, if you think about it, guys, is it was part of working through the plan of what we were going to do. We knew how old, obviously, Diego was, and we knew with my son, Charlie, being there, and with Scott's son, Andrew and Frankie, we knew that Diego would be running up and down the stairs with him. That's why we said that the packages all came to the FBI and we were the ones to distribute them, because we didn't want Diego running out, or Carolina, and seeing vans instead of Santa's sleigh.
Got it.
Oh, I followed Maureen down to the vans. I remember that very well.
Mm-hmm.
And were they marked vans, Maureen? Did they say FBI on them, or were y'all wearing your raid jackets? Like, how did everyone dress? What did y'all do with that?
No, we all just wore regular clothes. I think a couple of us were on our way to Christmas Eve Mass after that, but no, we were all just wearing regular clothes. But that's what Scott and I wore at work. You know, he was working fugitives, and I was working narcotics. So we did not wear our raid jackets. That probably would have been a nice touch.
And what about Diego's dad? How did he feel about this, Momo?
He was overwhelmed.
And what about your mom's gift? Do you remember that? What that was?
My mom's gift, the Louis Vuitton bag. No, but when I grew older and learned what Louis Vuitton was, saw the bag, and she told me it was from that day, and she still loves it. So now I do. Back then, I didn't understand, you know, how big of a gift that was.
Wow.
Right. She said, "I can't take this," and I said, "It's from your husband." And she looked at him, and he looked at me, and I winked at him. And he's like, "I picked that out for you." And, you know, and she looked at him like, "Really? Like, how the hell did that happen?" But she said, "I really can't take this." I said, "Listen, that round has left the chamber, honey. It's yours. There's no bringing that thing back."
Awesome.
It was fun.
Amazing. And so how did you guys sort of end the evening, Maureen?
Pilar was trying to tell us that there's way too many toys. She can't possibly, where was she going to put them? And in retrospect, I don't know where she put them, because they were piled up. The whole fireplace was obscured. The tree, it was piled up 3/4 of the way up the tree. The couch was covered, the floor, I don't know what she did with all those toys. And they were nice toys.
Diego, can you answer that?
I'll shed some light on that. She put a lot of them in her closet, because I remember I would play with one and, you know, I got bored or tired of it after a couple of weeks. And I remember going into her closet one time, I don't know for what, and there were all the, like, you know, a good amount of the gifts from that day. And I was like, "Oh my God, here are the gifts." And so every once in a while, she'd pull out one and let me, you know, play with the one, enjoy that one. And then, you know, special occasions to bring out another one. So she made the day last, you know, I can't say exact, but for months, if not years, just off of the toys from that day.
Wow.
So it extended beyond just that one day. It lasted for a very long time.
Well, Maureen, can you explain? I mean, I think it's something that, you know, lots of people understand, giving and charity and, you know, the feeling that can develop between coworkers. But I've always thought that there's something a little bit different, maybe a little bit deeper, when it comes to coworkers who put on a badge and a vest and carry a gun. Can you talk about how that played into the reaction of the LA field office?
Sure. Well, anytime you're in a life and death situation, whether it be with law enforcement or the firefighting service or military or paramedic or any pretty much first responder, you're thrust into situations where you have absolutely no idea what's going to happen. The only thing you do know is you've got your brothers and sisters in blue with you. And that is a very, very powerful thing. And there were many times when something would happen where we weren't at all sure of how things would shake out, and we would go to Louis. And the one thing about Louis is he's one of those rare breeds of attorneys where he had your back 100%, and he would go to bat for you. I mean, he went to bat for me at the very end at this other part of this Christmas thing. We actually got him into a Notre Dame game, his very last Notre Dame game of his life. But that was another thing. But during that meeting, when we were at the Notre Dame game, he was telling me how he was backing me for this other thing where another attorney was saying,
you know, when you go through trial, there's always issues. And so this attorney was alleging something, nothing criminal or anything, but Louis totally had my back and he just did that for everyone. He was amazing. But I wanted to talk for a second, if I could, about another gift that people gave Louis or Diego's dad. And Diego, I never shared this with you because I never even really thought about it until I was on the phone with Gina Isabel this morning and with another girl named Andrea Forner, who works at the office over there. She said that she was in Germany when she found out about your dad and she was heartbroken because he was so loved and she couldn't get a gift for the toy drive, but she gave your dad all of her vacation for that year. I mean, so many people gave your dad their whole vacation. So not spending time with their family so that your dad could get paid while he was sick.
Wow.
And, you know, that speaks a lot to, you asked earlier what I understood of the FBI and it's choices like this and people like this that showed me what the FBI was before I even understood, you know, what it really was at its core. It was the people that I understood. And so thank you for sharing that, Maureen.
Yeah. And Maureen, I was the beneficiary of that same kind of generosity from my colleagues, one of which is Jim Fitzgerald, many of whom donated their vacation time to me when I was sick, when I was going through the bone marrow transplant. And it helped me, you know, pay the bills because they don't go away just because you're in the hospital. And cancer is such a horrendous thing. And when it hits you hard. So, as you know, we all know that. And yeah, the FBI and my colleagues at the FBI, I still thank them to this day.
We were glad to help, Jim.
Thank you.
Just such an amazing story. And Diego makes such a great point about what you learned was sort of what it meant to be in the FBI, what it means to the people that are in it to be in the FBI. And Maureen, that's such an important story, I think, about Diego's dad that really shows that brotherhood. That brotherhood of people who wear the badge. And I think it's something that those of us who've never had to wear a badge and a gun, you know, can't ever quite understand, but I respect so much. And it's why, you know, not to get too off the Christmas topic, but it's why, you know, you hear law enforcement will generally defend other law enforcement when they're accused of doing something wrong. And that's because of that brotherhood, because of that the risk that they take every day when they do the job. And most people will never have to take that risk in doing their job. And so they can't understand the kind of person that it takes to put themselves into the position of being at risk. I mean, Fitz, don't you think that kind of creates a really special relationship between people who are potentially risking their lives every day?
Oh, there's nothing like being a uniformed police officer and knowing you can count on your colleagues to be there on a car stop. And in FBI, you're kicking down a door of a bank robber or a police, someone who shot at police officers, killed them, whatever. And to know that you have people behind you, maybe in front of you, out the back door, covering different windows. That says something. That adds a whole new aspect to any type of a workplace relationship. To knowing that it's one thing if you're a cost accountant or a tax attorney, important jobs, I get it, but no one saves, no one in those fields of work wakes up and may have to save someone's life later on that day. We know we can count on the people in law enforcement, the vast majority of them certainly, to have your back in that regard. And I'm talking with someone here today, Jim Clemente. I never had the pleasure of working with Maureen, but certainly with Jim. And we kicked in how many doors together in the South Bronx and other parts of Brooklyn, Jim. And I knew you were there for me. And
more than one or two.
and you knew I was there for you. And that does have a special element to it that other professions don't have. So you're absolutely right in what you said here. And your story about Diego and his father, I never knew his father, Luis, either. It's a beautiful story. And I don't want to sound cold by saying this, but it would have happened in any FBI office because that's how we are. And I'm so glad you had the right people there at the right time, Diego, with Maureen and her colleagues to do this for your family in what was a very, no doubt, a very difficult time. But That's the FBI family, is why they call it a family.
Jim, it's interesting because the FBI family has continued to help Diego and his sister, Carolina. Diego, do you feel comfortable talking about the tuition that is being helped paid by the agents?
My mom let me know when I was younger that I was accepted or awarded or that my sister and I were given access to the FBI College Memorial Fund. Hmm. And so what they do is cover 75% of all expenses, living, food, and tuition for college for both my sister and I.
Wow.
So 75% of the total. So, a absolutely massive help for my mom. It gave me the opportunity to be able to go to the school I wanted. And I'm lucky enough to have my sister at the University of Wisconsin-Madison with me. So, we're both able to be there because of the FBI. That statement in itself is pretty extraordinary and speaks to the even more things that the FBI is able to do.
And I'm sure there are people that give to that with the express allocation to you and your sister. I would imagine that could be true too.
So Diego, I have a question for you. With all this law enforcement influence in your life, I wonder whether you or your sister have ever considered a law enforcement career, or whether you just think your horizons have been so much more expanded because of your opportunity to go to the school of your choice.
Yeah, it's something I've definitely always considered. My sister, I don't think as much, but it's something that I've always very seriously thought about. And something I continue to think about. And so obviously the opportunity to be able to attend Madison and work towards possibly that goal is awesome.
What are you studying?
International relations with a concentration in global security. So I'm on my, and a minor in criminal justice. So on the path towards it.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Good for you. Good for you.
I feel like I'm interviewing a budding FBI agent, you guys. Or maybe, maybe he's a little smarter than the rest of you people. And
so he's
going to
be the director of the FBI.
Become a federal prosecutor instead, so that you can be in charge of all the FBI.
Oh, here goes Francie on that fantasy again.
like any AUSA was ever in charge of me any or FBI Jim agent. Or Fitz. Yeah, or any of us, right.
Well, Diego, as you can see from this conversation.
It is kind of funny because everybody does look up to the U.S. Attorney's Office as the premier law enforcement agency in the world. Right.
That's what I think, Diego. You
but
heard
we
the
couldn't
truth
do it without
Jim's
them,
mouth.
For sure.
Yeah. They're okay when they assist us in prosecuting bad people. But, you know, they can't prosecute a single person until we bring them in. And we do also help them fix the cases from other three-letter agencies.
I might remind James Clemente that they also can't arrest anyone without the permission.
Oh, that's not true at all.
But anyway, I digress, Diego.
Can we get back to Christmas stuff, please?
I've arrested plenty of people with no permission from the U.S. Attorney's Office. I have no idea
what
you're talking
about. Rogue operations, another episode,
yeah.
James.
Maureen, have you ever had to ask the U.S. Attorney's Office for permission to make an arrest?
No.
I mean, that's just a fallacy beyond
ridiculousness. I think it's fantastic that you are at least influenced enough to think about it. That's great. And
don't think about the U.S. Attorney's Office. They obviously twist your brain.
FBI agent.
Thank you.
Well, it's just an amazing caper, Maureen. And I think that it shows that there is a serious amount of compassion, humanity, and brotherhood inside the FBI that I'm not sure most people really know about. And so thank you so much, Diego, for coming on to let us talk about your experience and your dad.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's
Thanks,
really
Diego.
Nice to
Love
meet
you,
Diego.
Merry Christmas to you and your family, Diego.
Thank you. Likewise. And it was great to meet all of you. Maureen, thanks for letting me know.
Thanks, hon. Love all you. Right. Tell your mom and sister I said hi.
Yeah. Give our love and best wishes for a Merry Christmas to your mother and sister, too.
Will do. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, God bless, Diego.
A
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
So Fitz, let's hear it. I have the strong suspicion that Jim Fitzgerald has a Christmas caper or two, some sort of a tale, something that happened at Christmas, maybe when you were a store detective, a beat cop, or an FBI agent. Have I left anything out?
You've read all three of my books, apparently.
Of course.
Or looked at the back covers anyway.
Well, I was
going to be, it's going to be tough to follow Maureen's story. That was a beautiful story about Luis and his family and what you guys did for him. And I thought about, I know, a week or two ago, we discussed this. I didn't want to get anything heavy duty. I remember as a young rookie patrol officer getting domestic calls on Christmas Eve, Christmas night, and there's a tree knocked over by the drunken father and presents kicked in. I also remember and we'd arrest the father sometimes on Christmas Day. He's trying to make bail. I also remember a rash of burglaries every Christmas night in one industrial park or another. There'd be some sort of a burglary, and a big one too. We always figured out of New York or out of Philly, these pros that took a lot of stuff. They just knew to hit on Christmas night. And, you know, you think, what kind of family do these people come from that they're planning all Christmas Day to do a burglary? Remember, there's an estate called Penryn in Bensalem. It's on the Delaware River. It goes back to the Revolutionary War. And there was a rumor that a headless guy, you heard me right, headless guy, ghost perhaps, roamed around there every Christmas morning in the wee hours.
And this wasn't Ichabod Crane.
I was just thinking
Sleepy Hollow.
That was a whole different story. Maybe this guy was related to old Ichabod, but it was sort of and I never quite had the time either. I didn't work that shift that year or we were busy doing something else. But finally one Christmas night around 2 a.m, nothing else was happening. I think I was a sergeant already. Everything was quiet. I said, let me pull into Penryn here all by myself in my patrol car, and let me see what's going on there. And sure enough, I pulled in, and I heard some, I turned the engine off, put the windows down, heard some strange noises, some little, strange, maybe animal noises in the background. But no, I never saw the headless man. But I have a shotgun in my rack next to me. I'm carrying a .357 Magnum. You know, I was a little afraid then that the headless guy would come up on Christmas night.
Where are you going to shoot him? I mean, really, if he's already lost his head and he can still walk around and haunt people.
Being shot in the heart won't bother him.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm thinking, how do I handle this guy and what do I do? But I did get out and walk around a little bit, but never saw the headless man.
But you were literally, you said to yourself, self, I'm a sergeant and I want to go see if there's a headless man walking around. That was the actual plan.
Listen, Francie, you got to follow the tips. You got to follow the tips that come in.
I mean, I just think that's fantastic because Fitz, I don't know anyone more logical or cerebral than you are. And I just find it amazing that you're going ghost hunting on Christmas.
And I was. And I tell you, I had a chill down my spine. I felt that there was some entity, some presence near me. I didn't see it, didn't really hear too much that I could lock in on it. But I said, you know what? It's time to get out of here. I think I'd rather take on some armed robbers at the local 7-Eleven than this headless ghost that may be roaming around this old property here. So, that was just a few little tied stories here. But real quick, just to show how our society and even our culture changed, I'll never forget, and Jim, you're going to come into this story in a few minutes. Uh-oh. I'll never forget, as a rookie cop, my first night on the job after the academy was like November 22nd of 1976. So less than a month later, I come in for a roll call on actually Christmas Day. And there's the chief of police handing out bottles of whiskey to all the cops, wine, and envelopes with money, with cash in it. And I'm thinking, what is this? Is this bribe? Is this graft? And the senior cops, no, kid, don't worry about it. All the local merchants just chip in, and these are the gifts they give to the police on Christmas time. And I only got $35 because I only started in November, so it was prorated. But the other cops who, of course, been there the whole year, they had a few hundred dollars in envelopes. And these are from the local tow companies, lawyer's office, supermarkets. I mean, you name it, a business in Ben Salem, they're contributing to this little fund. I thought, this is weird. Can I get arrested for this? Will the FBI come in?
Can you say RICO?
I know. And finally, it turns out within about a year or two, I think some people even within the department started asking questions and said, we better cut this habit out. So the only thing we would take after that would be food. You're right. They'd send in a nice tray, Maureen, and of all kinds of lunch meat and whatever, but no more booze and no more money across the table. But I guess they wanted to, you know, show their support to the police, but also, hey, if we're speeding, 5 miles over the limit, just remember, I'm the guy that chipped in, $100, for your PD. So that went away. And then, Jim, 11 years later, you and I were together. We were in the academy right now 32 years ago, if you remember.
Yes, I know.
And our first Christmas was in New York in obviously December of 1988. And I'll never forget coming in Christmas Eve, Jim, to the squad area. And I didn't know this up front. I don't think you did either. And there's our boss, John Coleman. He's setting up a bar, and this is at 9 a.m., and there's whiskey, there's scotch, there's beer, there's wine. What? This is in an FBI bank robbery squad office, and
First thing in the morning.
I was trained as a cop. You never drink on duty. You get in a shooting, and you have, one little iota of alcohol in your breath. Your career is over. Here I am, an FBI agent, walking into this office, and here's all these whiskey and other liquor-type bottles lined up, and I'm not a daytime drinker ever since my college days.
Probably not at 9 a.m. anyway.
I've given that up, but I was not tempted at all. And I just, I passed on it even at lunchtime. But I think it went on for a few more years, Jim. It was perfectly accepted. Nobody blinked or looked twice. I mean, some people drank, others didn't. It was no big deal. But then I know Louis Free got in and what was it, Jim?
The Bright Line.
And there was no drinking at all anymore. All these bars around the New York office shut down because the agents couldn't drink. If, God forbid, they got in an accident on the way home, which, of course, would have been a bad thing, but they basically get fired. Not like the old days where kind of a slap on the wrist. So just to show you how society and our culture, even within law enforcement, had changed from 76, getting these handouts by the chief, just standing in line and getting these gifts from the local merchants, to even 11 years later, no money was given to us per se or at all, but we are, they're certainly subsidizing us getting drunk by lunchtime if we chose.
See, Francie would like that because she's obviously a day drinker, right, Jim?
Really?
Well,
it's because I have to deal with Jim that I'm a day drinker.
Oh, please. You have a Martian sticking out of your vase. Okay.
So it's Baby Yoda.
Whatever. It's green and it looks alive.
It's not good. So, it's not good, Francie. No, let's just put it that way.
Clearly delusional behavior on your part.
Well, I just want to remind you, Jim, that it's 3 hours later here in Atlanta than it is there in LA. So it's definitely post appropriate time for drinking.
It's still day drinking. Let's call it what it is.
Still day clearly, time.
You can stop denying it.
And by the way,
Jim,
go ahead.
I was listening.
Go ahead.
No one here sees the Martian, Jim. What are you looking at?
Oh, I see it.
What have you been drinking?
Oh, maybe it's
Maureen. Thank you. You too.
Maybe it's just a reflection from the screen. I don't know.
It is. It's my true visage.
There you go. So off topic slightly, tonight, Jupiter and Saturn will line up 45 minutes after sunset, right in that line of sight where the sun goes down. And they will be really bright and supposed to look like maybe the Star of David.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody should check it out, because I think it's once every 2,000 years, and another case, once every 800 years.
Yeah,
800 years is the going.
It was called the Christmas Star or the Star of Bethlehem. Yeah. Or
yep.
I wasn't around the last time. Maybe, Francie, you could tell us if it was okay.
I was here 800 years ago when we
previously.
Well, how was it?
Are you kidding me? I would not have survived 800 years ago. I don't think I could have gotten my nails done. They probably weren't doing pedicures.
Could you imagine Francie in the Middle Ages, you know, with the
she'd have talents for
her,
sure.
Her job would probably be moat cleaning. I think that would be
moat cleaner would suit
moat
me.
Moat cleaner or tar and featherer. I don't know, one of those two jobs. Maybe
Audrey made something terrible, Jim.
Yeah.
Thank
you. She could be a tar dipper for sure. Yeah
definitely.
Tar and feather, that's for sure.
A tar heel.
But that's a whole different subject. Anyway.
She might have been, actually, somebody might have tried her as a witch because, you know, she probably, you know, has some witch-like characteristics.
I do have mysterious powers, although I've never gone ghost hunting the way Jim Fitzgerald did. Well, as a uniformed police officer, can I point out?
I know, on duty, being paid. Little weird. We never did that in the FBI, did we, Jim? I don't know. We did have some weird situations. I remember one of the first bank robbery stakeouts that we had, and I was in the car with Bill, maybe? What's Bill's last name? I can't remember. Let's just call him Bill. And, you know, we're overnight staking out this bank robber's place, and at about, I don't know, 3:15 a.m., a car comes creeping up slowly down the street. I mean, I'm talking about creeping, less than a mile an hour, and windows are tinted. We're like, oh my God, we must have gotten made. They're coming to shoot us or whatever. And we could barely see the side of the car late at night, and it looks like there's bullet holes along the whole side of the car. And we're like, what the f- is this? So as this car then slowly came across the street and slowly crashed into the cars parked right across the street from where we were sitting, we, of course, all bailed out of our cars, surrounded the car, and it was a drunk kid who had driven through some mud and that splattered up on the side and looked like bullet holes in the side. But apparently, he actually lived literally four doors down the street and was trying to get home drunk and made it almost all the way home, but passed out at the steering wheel just before our surveillance. So because we were trying to be discreet and didn't want to blow up our surveillance, we kind of, I think somebody drove him the four doors down, parked the car and got him out of the car, and then told him to shut up about the fact that we were there. And I don't think he could have remembered it anyway. But anyway, that was my first overnight surveillance in the FBI. Do you remember that, Jim?
I don't. I think I may have missed that one. I remember the one you met us out in Queens
with
the bank burglars. I think we've told that story already.
Well, I have a question for you two. It's a Christmas question.
Mm-hmm.
And one of you will volunteer for each one, I hope.
Oh.
I think it's time to do a profile of Santa Claus.
Oh.
And maybe even a profile of the Grinch who stole Christmas.
Oh, jeez.
So I don't know which one
that's
of you
easy.
Wants to tackle which one, Fitz or Jim?
Well, all I can say is the Grinch is a criminal, and typically we do profile criminals, so I don't think that would be too difficult to do.
Right.
But clearly, the Grinch, first of all, is green, much like your Martian, okay? And why is he green? Well, is it because he is, I don't know, because he doesn't have enough blood flowing through his necrosed heart, which has shrunk and is rotting away, and it's just spreading, so it's actually gangrenous, and that's why his whole body turned green? I think that's possible.
But why? Wow,
a medical profile.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
I mean, explain. He hates Christmas, but why does he take Christmas if he hates Christmas?
Well, Francie, if you hate something, you try to avoid it. Might be why I haven't seen you lately, but
hilarious.
It's just something that you do when you hate something. I mean, the fact is that
power driven.
A whole bunch of weird looking people in this village singing weird things like Eavu Dore. I mean, what the hell does that mean anyway?
No one knows what it means.
And making noise even when they don't have Christmas, when they don't have toys and lights and wonderful things. So this really annoys the Grinch. He doesn't realize it, but this is what actually snaps him into action, and he actually grows a heart and doesn't turn his green, and he actually gives them Christmas back.
But Jim,
and he feels wonderful.
My question is, what kind of criminal not only steals the toys and the gifts, but even the roast beast for dinner? He takes everything out of the refrigerators. I mean, that seems pretty extreme to me.
Well, that's Christmas to a lot of people, is their meal. Sometimes that's all they have. So this guy wants ultimate power.
He's not a nice guy, that's for sure. And he reminds me of a number of offenders that Jim Fitz and I went after over the course of our careers.
Fitz, I think then Jim has profiled the Grinch. I think that means you're stuck trying to profile the man who breaks into people's houses and stuffs things in their socks and then shrinks away again. It seems weird to me. I think Santa's a burglar.
Francie, myself. Have you gotten coal in your stockings? Is that what's up here?
Never. I've always been good. I've never.
I don't know.
Just to be clear.
Well, it makes me think just what did Santa do in between climbing down kids' chimneys to deliver toys? Maybe he was also burglarizing some commercial entities in Ben Salem Township.
Without his head?
That would be a whole different story. But
I don't know. Santa, he could have lost his head somewhere in Sheboygan or something.
And he wound up roaming the fields of Penryn Manor on the Delaware River. And now you gave me the easy one of profiling Santa Claus. And of course, as we know, you don't profile someone whose name. What we do is a behavioral assessment of Santa Claus. And yes, he's a kind of a loner that he lives in the North Pole.
A bunch of elves and Mrs. Claus.
I wasn't finished yet.
Oh.
From his own sort of social relations, they're just kind of, it's him, Mrs. Claus, and a bunch of these indentured servants. I don't know who they are, these elves. I hope they get minimum wage. I hope they get health benefits. I hope, and the reindeer, this one poor reindeer with the red nose, I hope he's getting some kind of dermatologist treatment for that. So I think there's a lot of questions we have about Santa Claus. I would love to do an interview. Jim, I can see me on one side of, on the left side of the table, you on the right side, and we're just throwing our fingers in his face, slamming our fist down. Okay, Claus, here's another question for you. Where were you on the night of, and take it from there.
Well, December 24th, obviously.
Mrs. Claus is arguably his accomplice.
Well, I think she'd provide him an alibi, though, fairly clearly. I mean, I'm just guessing.
Yeah, like most accomplices,
And we couldn't get her to testify in court because, of course, she's...
Spousal privilege.
It was a spousal privilege, whatever that is. So, it would be quite a challenge. I've always had questions for him over the years. He likes little kids, but I'll assume that's all very healthy and no issues with that. So he's just a benevolent guy, we'll say, with... altruistic tendencies, but I'm sure everyone has a little bit of a dark past, and I wouldn't mind looking like what he was doing in college and who he hung out with then. If you're ever on the south side of Chicago with Maureen or in the Bronx with
Jim.
Well,
that's really suspicious if that was the case.
Or in Ben Salem with you, Fitz.
Around
parking lots with no head. That's probably Santa Claus.
I have to kind of start putting
together. If you're trying to squish yourself down all these chimneys, I mean, your head could pop off. And then, what are you going to do? Run around looking for
it. You haunt people after that.
And there's these damn unsolved burglaries every Christmas night.
Always.
I got to get up right now, actually. I'm going to get back to work on these things. 35 years
now,
after
if only you were hanging out in some, billboard or something at night when these burglaries went down. that might have solved the crimes.
If only I had thought of that.
The home burglaries had a lot to do with people going to a family member's house to celebrate and then go to midnight mass. So if the lights weren't on in the house and they weren't up in whatever, you could likely hit the house with success.
Let's not give burglars tips.
Is that what you've done? Is that what you're trying to tell us? Is this something from your own
past? Not the how-to show, Maureen.
It's an explanation for some of Fitz's questions.
Actually, Christmas time is the most prolific burglary period of the year because people are buying all these new gifts and people are out visiting. This year will be different. People hopefully will be smart enough to be at home the whole time.
Or we'll have a huge spike in home invasions.
Exactly.
I'm going with the home invasions.
People dressed as Santa Claus.
No, but on that note, with home invasions.
Home invasions can be met by home weapons.
Yes, well, that's true. And I live in Georgia. So what I want to say, though, is a really huge thank you to all the law enforcement people. I mean, I don't have any Christmas capers, but I, as a brand new baby assistant U.S. attorney, I was on duty for Christmas. And so I have had to carry the duty phone and get those calls at 2 o'clock in the morning Christmas week when nobody else was working on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, have to drive into the office and sign the search warrant, get the search warrants up to a judge for signature or arrest warrants. So I just want to say thank you to you all who have been on duty on the holidays, and a special thank you to all of our listeners and their family members and their friends and their loved ones, past and present, who have been on duty during the holidays so that the rest of us can sleep soundly with visions of sugar plums dancing in our heads or coals in our stocking, in Jim's case, or whatever.
Or Martians in our vases.
I really, in all sincerity, want to say thank you to you all, to you, Fitz and Maureen, and even you, James, to say thank you for all that you did to keep us safe during your many, many years of service. And to everyone out there doing it now, risking their lives for us, I just want to say thank you. I hope they have a very Merry Christmas this year.
And I echo that completely and hope everybody gets home safe and healthy for the holidays.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, right, everybody.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Stay safe out there.
And thank you to Maureen and to Fitz and to Diego, and of course to Matt and Josh for joining us today on our Christmas extravaganza. Jim, I think it was everything we hoped for.
It was quite extravagant.
I don't think that's a word.
Oh, it is now. No. You can't have an extravaganza without it being extravagant.
I think you're extravagant, Jim.
I am. I try.
Wait,
anyway.
Just before we go, one quick question. Fitz, is that a word?
Not of which I am aware, but you know what? I'll go. It'll be an Urban Dictionary tomorrow, I have a feeling.
Probably.
Well, thank you, everyone, for this holiday extravaganza episode of Best Case, Worst Case. We have never had one quite like this before, and I can't imagine us having another one like this in the future, but I guess we could try. Until next time, thank you for listening to Best Case, Worst Case. Signing out. Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production produced by Francie Hakes, Josh Murphy, and Jim Clementi at Empire Studios LA. Engineered and edited by Matt Gergel. Music composed and performed by Simba Sumba and hosted by Wonder.
You can listen to Best Case, Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you want to do something about child sexual abuse, Darkness to Light can help. Did you know that more than 90% of the time children are sexually abused by someone they know?
Jim, this isn't about stranger danger. It's about learning the true risks. Darkness to Light's training can help prevent, recognize, and react to child sexual abuse in your community.
When you make the decision to get involved, kids can be protected. It starts with you.
Visit www.d2l.org to take the training and learn more.
That's D, 2L.org.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.